This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Welcome to In the News This Week, the podcast from some of the team behind Have I Got News For You, serving up an irreverent stumble through the headlines when the TV show can't. Think of it like this. If the main show is a loving matriarch, then we're Victoria Beckham grinding on Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
I'm Mike Raymond, and joining me this week, we followed the Yellow Brick Road and reached the Emerald City. Well, St Albans via Zoom. It's Emerald Paston.
And well, that's nice. That's a nice intro.
Keeping the Wizard of Oz theme going. If only he had a brain. It's Jack Harris. Hello.
I've been waiting. I've been promised it for a long time.
You are 90% straw.
Listen, why do you think I'm so tall? It's mainly straw.
How are you, Emerald? Not seen you for a while.
Very good, thank you. Yeah, I really enjoyed the episode last week. It was really disgusting.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're not here.
I love poo humour. I wish I could have been there.
It's funny because you said that in a way which implied that you absolutely don't love poo humour at all. Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah.
No, I do. I'm hoping for some this episode.
Oh, God, well.
That feels like a big...
Sorry for taking us down this path.
Yeah.
Straight away.
Jack desperately Googling a new round two story. Well, I tell you what, there is a lot of shit's gone down.
That is true.
Segue. Let's get into round one. We begin with the bigger news story of the week. But before we do, if you'll indulge me, I want to take you back a few days. Mm-hmm. It'd been a good week for Keir Starmer. He stood up to Donald Trump, not only on Greenland, but also publicly chastising the president for his ignorant comments on NATO troops in Afghanistan. His favourite free corporate team ticket, Arsenal, have bored their way to the top of the league. And Ocado have an offer on his favourite brand of plain yoghurt. Life is good for Keir. Then suddenly out of nowhere, news of rebellion in the north. Yes, Andy Burnham announced his intentions to stand as a Labour candidate in the upcoming by-election in Gorton and Denton. Jack, what has happened since? Who put a stop to this?
It was a board of nine, wasn't it?
Mm.
The NEC.
Isn't that where they film Gladiators?
Yeah.
The NEC in Birmingham.
Imagine Keir Starmer and Shabana Mahmood and Lucy Powell all in one place. It is gladiatorial, to be fair.
So. I've been picturing it more like the traitors and just hoping that like they reveal their votes on the little chalkboards and Claudia's there for some reason.
And they all spell Andy with like, it's like Andy with an I and then Andy two with E's. Two N's. And yeah.
And do you know, the breakfast room on Traitors does look a bit like the Cabinet Office.
Claudia coming in to tell them what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, except it's not Claudia, it's just like Pat McFadden.
The thing is, if
but he wears the same kind of outfit, so it works.
Oh, yeah.
Those fingerless gloves that he wears, just like fingerless red leather gloves.
Yeah.
The thing is, in the Lib Dems breakfast room, they are literally coming in and saying, David, you are going to be on a speedboat falling into water today as well.
It's true.
That is your policy. He just does all the tasks, which, funnily enough, is the worst bit of Traitors. But... But this is Andy Burnham. So he went to try and go for the candidacy of a by-election that's happening in Greater Manchester. And in order to do that, he had to get it passed by the NEC because it's got loads of repercussions on it. It's like, it means that you then have to have another mayoral race, which I was reading, it costs £4.7 million to run the Manchester mayoral race if Andy Burnham was to leave and run to become an MP. Mm-hmm. But I thought, actually, £4.7 million is nothing. It's pocket change. Just chuck it in Rachel Reeves' black hole. Like, surely they just...
Yeah.
Surely there's like almost like a shorthand now where people are just like, it costs this much, and they're like, black hole.
I'm confident, like, given how badly Starmer's messed things up, if we just went round saying we're having a whip round to get rid of Starmer... Like, it's not even like...
4.7 million, yeah.
4.7 million, you know. Everyone just gives a pound. You'd have it in no time. You wouldn't even have to go outside London. Yeah, so this is the NEC, which is the National Executive Committee, Labour's Executive Committee, which is stacked with Starmer supporters. You've got Shabana Mahmood and... Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer's So, incredibly, of the nine members who voted, it was only Labour's deputy leader, Lucy Powell, who voted for Burnham to stand because it's sort of widely acknowledged that she does not care for Keir. For someone who wants to be Prime Minister, Andy Burnham loses a lot of votes, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's not the greatest at plotting, is he?
No. He's not the greatest at winning.
Yeah, that's true. Although, to be fair, I saw a graphic of like how well he won the Manchester mayoral election, and he did absolutely smash it. I mean, given how much planning he had for this, like, he chose a terrible scarf to wear on Sunday. He's on the front of the pages of all the... I'm no Trini or Susanna, but I'm going to say the scarf was a bad look for someone who wants to become Prime Minister.
Would you have gone with something chunkier?
He kind of had it like, pattern. You know when it's like, it's not quite long enough and you put it around in a loop and you pull it through.
Mm.
And it kind of was just sat there on top of his jumper and it kind of looked like a...
Like a big tie.
Like a hairy cravat.
Yeah, it was weird.
Emerald, is Labour's bubbling civil war about to become a lot less civilised? Because it doesn't seem like this is the last we're going to hear of him.
Yeah, I saw one. There was one MP for East Hull and he said that, I mean, a lot of people are angry about Andy Burnham not getting to run for this seat. And he said that we're benching our equivalent of Lionel Messi.
Oh my God.
I thought was quite
hyperbolic.
And I don't even know much about football.
Yeah, Emerald's like, I know nothing about football. Even I know that is an insane analogy to make. Yeah.
But I don't know what Keir Starmer is then the equivalent of if they think that Andy Burnham's Lionel Messi.
Well, Keir Starmer's an Arsenal fan.
Oh, yeah.
And they play very boring, predictable football and generally look like they're going to do something and then don't. So, yeah, quite apt to compare him to that, I think.
Did you see, and I saw another quite good quote before the kind of blocking happened.
Yeah.
And it was one Labour MP told Politico, they said, it would seem quite small dick energy from number 10 if they blocked Burnham
I was going to say, there was a headline in the New Statesman. It said, blocking Andy Burnham would be small dick energy.
Wow.
Has that become like a soundbite? Can you block something with a small dick? That's a philosophical question.
It's one that's, I think, all political analysts should be answering, basically.
I just want to see everything in politics now measured in how big the dick energy was.
Who's got big dick energy in British politics, then?
Angela Rayner.
Yes.
Well, 100%. With Maggie Thatcher, they were like, oh, she ruled with an iron fist. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is like sort of kind of, I don't know, limping out with small dick energy. That's the... The kind of message for a Starmer government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I tell you what, this rebellion in the north has inspired me. I've got a game for you.
Oh, I love it.
If you're up for it.
Excellent.
Very.
Of course. Always.
I'm going to give you a quote, and I want you to tell me if it came from Andy Burnham or the true king of the north, Jon Snow from Game of Thrones.
Excellent.
Here's your first one.
Okay.
If I fall, don't bring me back.
Oh, wow. Now, I don't know if maybe we should rethink doing the accent.
I agree.
Is that been stopped?
No. Mike, I'm more than happy for people to
Are you saying that wasn't an accent?
Maybe just
it, like,
not specifically hit, you.
Hit I've done Northern accents on television, I'll have you know. I'm famed for my Northern accents. Yeah.
On television? What do you mean?
Once I was working on Russell Howard and they needed someone to record something and play it in on the show. And I don't know why they asked me to do it in a Northern accent. So there's a clip on me on YouTube on Russell Howard's Good News saying, David Blaine, fucking shite. About the magician David Blaine.
It does sound better with that accent, I would say.
This is quite good. That one's quite good.
Oh, so I need to do more of a, if I fall, don't bring me back.
I will go with
that. I feel like when I switch to Northern accent, I'm giving small dick energy.
Maybe that's why it's appropriate. Maybe that's appropriate.
All right, I'll do it normal, and we'll seamlessly put it in. And there's no need for any of this. If I fall, don't bring me back. Who said that? King of the North or Andy Burnham, loser of the North?
I don't know if we can give him the title of loser. I think he's very much the winner of the North.
I think it's Jon Snow. I don't think Andy Burnham would put the image of himself falling into people's
Yes, of course it's Jon Snow. Although having already lost two Labour leadership elections, Burnham clearly doesn't believe in that epitaph of don't bring me back. Next, in my normal voice, no more false promises for the North.
That does sound very
Burnham.
I don't
think Jon Snow cares about false promises.
Yeah.
This is quite easy, Mike.
Is it? That was Andy Burnham. I mean, they're basically the same. Fine. Here you go. When enough people make false promises, words stop meaning anything, and then there are no more answers, only better and better lies.
That's so obviously what a politician would say, Mike.
So you're saying Andy Burnham. Guess what?
Oh no.
You know nothing about Jon Snow. I've been waiting to say that. Slam. That was Jon Snow in Game of Thrones.
Excellent.
So it turns out, hey, go. Maybe it's just not so easy to tell them apart.
Sorry.
I'm so relieved you got it wrong. I'm just
looking forward to the bit where you try to convince us that it's in Game of Thrones series 4 that he says, "I want the greatest bus network in the UK."
That definitely does say that. He definitely does say that. The HS2 branch.
This will go from Winterfell
to Leeds City Centre. One more for you. It's okay. A tough one now.
Great.
Everything before the word "but" is horse shit.
This feels more like an Oasis quote, to be honest.
It does, yeah.
I'm going to say that using the word horse shit feels like a very focus grouped... What swear word can I use that won't push me so far to not be seen as a politician, but shows me to be a bit gritty?
Right, because
and a bit serious.
Without the word horse, you're thinking of human poo, and that's not acceptable.
I wasn't, but fine. Emerald's
this is what a focus group would teach
it's
to you.
Come back round to poo
horse
so quickly.
Shit. Fine.
So what are we going for? Jon Snow or Andy Burnham?
I think Andy Burnham.
I think Burnham, yeah.
You know nothing about Jon Snow or Andy Burnham. It was Jon Snow. Andy Burnham did have a similar quote. It was everything before the word "but" is small dick energy. The quote he gave to the New Statesman last week. Nice. It turns out it's not, you know.
It wasn't so easy.
Not so easy to know the difference between your kings and a north.
Excellent. Yeah. Good game, Mike. That's good.
Genuinely was like, when you got the first two right, I was like, this is going the way of a lot of, like, have I got any few games that get cut in the edit?
Would the graphics of this game be Andy Burnham on the back of a dragon? Or would it be Jon Snow on a bendy bus?
Yeah, I think it would have to be Andy Burnham with Jon Snow's hair. But the Andy Burnham hairy cravat.
With so the scarf on.
He's like Northern Powerhouse Chic meets Winterfell hair.
I know, but this... Just to go back to the scarf very quickly,
Google it,
because I genuinely think it's like, you've got to look at least a little bit like you're going to be a prime minister. Yeah. We're in a world now where you kind of got to look a little bit cool.
I think it's deliberate then. I think he's trying not to look like Keir, right?
Is he trying to channel his inner, like Macron with his sunglasses the other week?
Maybe, yeah.
He looks so cool with those shades on.
No, he didn't. He talks about Trump being a bully whilst wearing something that should get him bullied. 100%. That outfit, like, should be something where people go, what the hell are you wearing?
No, I think Trump complimented the glasses.
That means nothing, Emma. That means nothing. Have you seen the Oval Office? Have you seen what he's done to the Oval Office?
Don't trust Trump's taste,
this
Jack.
Is not a man of taste.
It's got even more bling, hasn't it? I'm really enjoying this. Every month or so, someone takes a new picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Oval Office just gets more and more. I genuinely think it's only a matter of time before he does a press conference with, like, gold shades on.
Or Marco Rubio's just got, like, a gold leaf put over his face.
That would be an improvement. Moving on. Also this week, Tory backbenchers had their ultimate fantasies indulged as Kemi Badenoch showed them what it would look like if she was stranded on a desert island. Emerald, I know you've been keeping a close eye on Kemi, as you always do. What did you make of her appearance on Desert Island Discs this week?
Well, I listened to the whole thing.
God,
which,
did you?
Yeah.
Just for this, like, for fun or for the pod?
I will say I put it on like 1.5 speed, so I wasn't paying super close attention.
Oh, wow.
But she had two songs from Hamilton.
Okay.
I know what you're thinking. Did she specifically pick the songs that didn't include the line, "Immigrants, we get the job done"? And you're correct. She specifically picked songs that did not have that line.
Did she pick, did she pick the one that George III sings about how great he is?
She didn't go that far, I don't think.
She just goes to Hamilton for the George III monologue and then leaves. That's such a good insult.
She gives a standing ovation and then she goes home.
She's like, that's the true hero of this piece.
Gives everyone else the finger and then just picks up her tiny pot of ice cream and leaves.
The thing that everyone is reporting on is the fact that she said she joined the Conservative Party for the partying, is her quote, which I think is the equivalent of someone who starts going to raves because they enjoy the admin involved in like arranging the transport to get there. That's like the weirdest reason.
Also, it's saying she joined the Conservatives for partying. Mm. It's sort of interesting given that partying is exactly what killed the Tories.
You're so right. That's what gets them in trouble.
Yeah. It's like, don't bring up parties. Like, whatever you do. Everyone has just forgotten about that.
Yeah. Oh, well, if you're talking about stuff that she shouldn't have brought up, she managed to stand by a Woody Allen quote that she made.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
What was the quote?
The quote was, as Woody Allen said about sex, if it's not messy, you're not doing it right. The same is true of democracy.
Oh.
And she was asked, oh, do you still stand by that Woody Allen quote? And she said, yep.
I stand by that quote.
And as if that wasn't enough for her PR team, she also chose a Michael Jackson song. And she talked about how
Rolf Harris song? Sorry. No.
She talked about how her dad used to be compared to Bill Cosby as well.
Oh,
I just don't know how she managed to fit all this in.
Oh, I know. Do you know what I know has happened here? They do think when England go to the World Cup, England football, the players get really bored, so they bet each other. They say, oh, you have to slip in as many song titles as you can into your interviews. I think she's had a bet with like Mel Stride. She also said she'd take the Jim Will Fix It theme tune with her.
Yeah.
Another day, another big has-been defection to Reform.
Mm-hmm.
Suella Braverman, she's defected to Reform. Did you guys see the photo?
I did.
Of her with Farage?
Haven't seen the photo yet. I just read about it, but I didn't see the photo today.
It looks like they're trying to recreate the Beckham wedding dance. It's so creepy.
It is very weird.
Is it similar to the Beckham dance in that, like, Suella is giving more and Nigel doesn't want to be there?
I kind of think yes.
I think the press photographers in the room are Brooklyn Beckham and they're both
Victoria. Yeah. Collectively, they're Victoria.
Yeah. And it's upsetting to look at, but you can't look away.
Beckoning the media towards them and they're like, no, please.
And weirdly, Mark Antony introduced them. That was the weirdest bit.
But it's quite weird, this just like parade of sort of slightly disgraced, has been old sort of politicians coming out and Reform treating it like...
With Jenrick, he never kind of really hit the heights with the Tories, really, other than, like, you know, his leadership bit. But with Suella Braverman, like, someone pointed out, she spent 5 years as both, as like the Brexit minister, the Attorney General and the Home Secretary. And then she stands up in her press conference and goes, yeah, the Tories just didn't do what they said they were going to do in the 5 years that I was those particular roles for like immigration and, you know, doing Brexit properly. You sort of think people don't listen. That's it, I guess. I guess that's their tactic. People do not listen to what's happening.
In other news, what American institution does Labour want to recreate in the UK?
This is the new British FBI, isn't it? This is what they want to create. What Shabana Mahmood was saying was that it will take counter-terror, fraud and organised crime away from local police forces so they can tackle local crime. Like just
They must
you know,
be upset though that they won't get to do that anymore, the local police.
But they, you know, they'll be able to spend more time just watching shoplifters walk out of supermarkets.
Watching shoplifters and sharing racist messages on WhatsApp groups.
Yeah, and then just like dancing at festivals to like show that they care, man. And
what
wearing,
the police
like,
should be doing.
Pride tops, yeah.
I mean, to be fair, again, I will say I'll take that over just shooting innocent people in the face.
Yeah, there we go. So I know.
Yeah.
I did like this story with the British FBI because there's a story that came out this week about Kash Patel, who is the current director of the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
There was a thing about him coming over to the UK for like the Five Eyes, which is like a meeting of all the intelligence services for Australia, New Zealand, America, Canada and the UK. And his team sent a memo before he arrived to say Patel was unhappy with the agenda because he does not enjoy attending meetings in an office setting, which I'm like, fair enough, that I'm with you there, man. But then the suggestions they made is that he preferred to take meetings at social events, soccer matches, during helicopter tours, and even jet skiing.
I mean,
he needs to hang out with Ed Davey. They'd get on like a house on fire.
If Ed Davey was head of MI5, they'd be fine.
Oh,
but there was an amazing quote where like a senior FBI executive said, and this is in the New York Times, he said, hold on, is he really going to ask the MI5 director to go jet skiing instead of meeting? On the Thames, can you imagine?
That's a man who's never been to England in January. Yeah, we'll just jump on a jet ski. Yeah, we'll just discuss it over a barbecue on the beach. Also, like, good luck discussing that at football matches.
I mean, if you're at the Emirates, I guess it'd be quiet enough, so...
It's nicknamed the Library Emerald because their fans are boring. Keir Starmer supports a team who play at the library.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Honestly, you'd love it. You can go there, take your Guardian, your quinoa, just have a lovely time, and occasionally some football will break out.
Not a serious man, Kash Patel. He also got a photo with King Charles at this Windsor Castle meet with all these other Five Eyes people who were involved in different intelligence services. And they got sent the photo, but said, hey, look, this is just a keepsake, but like, there's actually people involved where we can't reveal their identity. It's going to put them in danger. And he just posted it on social media to millions of followers.
No.
But yeah, let's base our security services on that.
Yeah, let's create our own, 100%.
Fantastic.
Can I say that I don't really enjoy having my meetings and my chats via Zoom, so maybe we could in future do this...
Eating a
Michelin-starred meal in a helicopter.
First and last podcast to be held on a jet ski. Yeah.
Would we all be on one jet ski?
Pyramid style.
Maybe, yeah, like, okay, so not only have we got to get a jet ski, we've got to learn some kind of acrobatics.
Why not?
Yeah. Ed Davey, if you're listening, let us know. Welcome back to In the News This Week. It's time now for round two, where I draw eyes on my eyelids, have a little nap, and you two each bring a round two and talk to each other. No, it'll be great. It'll be great. I can't wait. I forgot my newspaper. Emerald, what you got for us this week?
We sat through your northern accents, Mike. The least you can do is listen to our stories.
You know what? Yeah, fair. You got me.
Well, we just spoke about a new police force in the UK, and there was a story in the Times this week about another new police force, which is Instagram's Marathon Police. And I have to warn you guys about this story. Everyone in it is really annoying, because on one side, we've got influencers. On the other side, we've got runners that are obsessed with like accurate marathon times. So basically, there's this account on Instagram. They call themselves the Official Marathon Time Integrity Unit. The profile page does say it's satirical, but I think their posts are very earnest, and I think they just have that there in case any legal issues come up, because it doesn't feel satirical from what they do.
So what's OMTU's purview?
OMTU has... Yeah, why
Marathon,
not?
MTIE, yeah.
OMTU, they alert its followers when content creators post their running times for marathons or races that they've done, and they use their Strava times, and often the Strava times don't match up with the official marathon chip time. And so this account chimes in and alerts its 30,000 followers that these people are inaccurate.
Calling about people's bullshit online.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm here for it.
So how do they actually find out like what the what it should be and stuff?
So I think partly they go through like influencers' posts and stories, and then also people send them DMs to alert them of whose times are inaccurate. And the alleged discrepancies range from a few seconds to almost 10 minutes. So this is important stuff, guys.
So it's not like hours. It's not like, I did it an hour less. It's like minutes.
It's because Strava, I don't know, logs the time differently. I couldn't be bothered to read into it in that much detail. But the example in the Times was there was a Love Island influencer, and he posted his time. He said it was 3:41 for the London Marathon. It was actually 3:50. And they sent him a message and they said, "You are under investigation for a second breach of OMTIU regulations. Could you please provide a written explanation for the discrepancy?" So this is where I start to lean more on they're really annoying.
See, yeah, but now this is an organisation the British government should be looking at and copying.
This is what I'm thinking. I think that their level of nitpicking could be used for such better reasons.
Like a sort of running Stasi.
They basically are the running Stasi. Yeah. The thing that slightly convinced me is that some of the influencers they comment on are like selling products and using these inaccurate times and saying the product helped them to get this time. And they posted a comment on one guy's inaccurate time, and they got an automatic DM from him trying to sell them a fitness plan. So that was when I was like, okay, this feels fair enough. But I actually think, Jack, that maybe we should have a rule where no one is allowed to share any information about their run times online. Just everyone should just do it quietly and demurely, and then we wouldn't need this om to you.
Yeah, but then I don't think people would run. I think that's the only thing people
would pretend to run. I thought it was going to be like they were looking into, you know, like you get people who like take a taxi to the finish line.
Yeah.
Now that's fun. That's the true crime documentary I want.
Yeah.
Do you know what? That was really good.
Thank you.
I don't know why I said it like that.
You've rubbed off the eyes from your eyelids.
Yeah. I was like, alert. Oh, sorry. Is that, sorry.
Very hard to sound sincere when you open the round with the fact that you're going to go to sleep during it.
Do you know, Emerald, that was great and I really enjoyed it.
When you started with, do you know what? That's what I
can't help
really
it. I can't help it.
It wasn't too bad this time, Emerald.
Yeah.
You've surprised
me. I give that
me.
Medium dick energy.
Oh, wow. I'll take it.
Yeah, there you go. Jack, what have you got for us this week?
So my story is about this climber who scaled a 101-floor skyscraper without safety gear. So this is American Alex Honnold, who climbed Taipei 101 in Taiwan, which was the world's tallest building for about 6 years. He did it in 91 minutes. Right.
Can we get Omitu to check that?
Yes.
It's actually 91 and a half.
Yeah, his Strava might have said 90, but what did his
just,
say?
His Strava is just 1 point.
Yeah, his Strava just
91 minutes.
He didn't
go anywhere.
It's weird. I'm looking at the results. It took him 91 minutes to get up and only 35 seconds to come down. Oh, God.
35 seconds, pretty good work, to be fair to him. What can't you do in 91 minutes?
Play a football match anymore because of the systemic problem with time wasting.
Emerald agrees.
It's not a joke, it's just a serious comment on society. You can't write a list of everyone who's joined Reform from the Conservative Party because by the time you do, it'll be out of date. Not another one.
Not another one. Well, what you can't do in 91 minutes is you can't watch the Oscar-winning documentary Free Solo that this climber became famous because that's 100 minutes long. So essentially in that time he could do the climb and make 3 cups of tea. So I suppose it sort of puts into perspective climbing 101 stories. Mike's now working out 3 cups of tea in 9 minutes.
But you can't drink them in between. And why would you make them separately? You're either making them together for 3 people.
Absolutely hard as nails. Mate, this guy's hard as nails. He would just down.
Yeah, but think how calloused his hands are, you know? He's not going to be able to flip that kettle.
How dexterous do you have to be to turn your kettle on, Emerald? Is it not just a switch?
Yeah, you're right. You probably could still do that.
Was this the guy that they broadcast him?
So it was live streamed on Netflix.
Yeah.
What did the Netflix executive Jeff Gaspin? Don't know why I'm saying his name.
He's called that. He just can't. Whenever someone pitches an idea, he just can't believe it.
Nice.
You're gonna climb a building in 90 minutes. That's Jeff Gaspin.
Jeff Gaspin, after he got over the shock, he was saying, what he said is that they were going to stream it with a delay in case something happened. Because this guy's climbing 101 stories outside this building without any ropes, any kind of safety mechanism whatsoever. If he falls, that's it. So they said, nobody wants to see anything like that happen. I think he underestimates most people.
Oh, my God.
When they're selling it, it's like, oh, it's so dangerous, all this kind of stuff. There's an element where I think some people are tuning in for that. But what did he do once he got to the top of the summit?
Made three cups of tea.
he did indeed. You've nailed it. No, he arrived at the top and he just said, sick.
Oh, my God.
Which I'm assuming is sort of celebratory rather than just how he felt.
I haven't seen the documentary, but I remember hearing like his wife and his family are like, please stop doing this.
This is what's really funny about the whole thing, right? Mm. Is his wife, she is very aware of like how dangerous this is.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about climbing like an accountant talks about spreadsheets.
Oh my God.
He is so matter of fact. And they constantly are trying to push him to get more out of him. So what do you think his response was when he was asked if dying on a climb would affect his family?
When you said he made climbing sound like accounting, I'm now trying to imagine, okay, what would Keir Starmer say in this situation? I feel like it's a similar vibe, making big things feel like doing some accounts.
We're going to climb. We're going to get to the top.
I mean, that's kind of basically it. They said, oh, your family, would dying affect your family? And he was like, kind of.
Oh my God.
He's got two little kids, but he said, I mean, baby Alice won't remember. Baby June probably wouldn't remember. And he said they wouldn't even necessarily be traumatised their whole lives. Yeah. Was his actual response.
Oh my God.
There's so many fun clips of that guy. There's a bit where they're talking about him climbing up with his baby. I think it's El Capitan. The reporter's like, how are you going to take the baby up? And he's like, put it in my backpack. That's the answer.
Yeah, I'm not an idiot. I'll put it in my bag. I'm not going to risk it falling out.
She basically then goes, and how are you going to get back down? He's like, the backpack. I just told you about the backpack. Last question for you. Only one other person has climbed that building. Who else has climbed it?
King Kong.
Now, Mike...
what? Godzilla? A man in an ape costume.
He's in a costume.
Fathers for Justice?
What would Fathers for Justice wear?
A Superman costume?
Spider-Man.
Batman.
Spider-Man. Oh. Exactly right. He wasn't wearing a Spider-Man costume, but he's nicknamed Spider-Man. This French climber, Alain Robert. But he did it with ropes, and it took him a frankly pathetic 4 hours.
Amateur.
Pathetic.
Amateur.
How dare he not risk his life for our entertainment?
He did it on Christmas Day in 2004, which makes sense, doesn't it? Because who is inviting a man who calls himself Spider-Man for Christmas dinner?
Okay, it's time for the missing words round, where I'm going to read out some headlines from the past week and you just need to fill in the missing words. Ooh. And we start with scandal as 2026 Winter Olympians attempt to gain advantage by what?
Figure skating in the shape of a dollar sign followed by a question mark?
That'd be impressive.
It would be, actually. Maybe they would deserve to win in that case.
Yeah.
Is it scandal as 2026 Winter Olympians attempt to gain advantage by studying topless Geordie in January?
That is
just seeing how they move about, you know.
Yeah.
St James's Park.
That's excellent. Yeah, another football reference for Emerald.
Is it attempt to gain advantage by using Roomba vacuum cleaners instead of curling stones?
Oh, nice,
nice.
Sneak them in.
Yeah.
Is it using performance enhancing dogs?
Huskies.
Huskies. Yeah.
Do you know what it is? Performance enhancing. It's scandal. As 2026 Winter Olympians attempt to gain advantage by injecting acid into their penises.
Oh my God. If you'd have given me like 1,000 guesses,
I was up for
it. It'd be something injected into penis, obviously.
We knew it had to be something to do with small dick energy. We should have guessed.
Well, do you know what? Actually, it is to do with size. It's a scandal that the Daily Mail has dubbed, yes, you've guessed it, Penisgate. It's basically concerns the ski jump, and it's the fact that there's quite strict rules about what clothing you wear against, they scan your body, so what clothing you wear against your body type. So there's been a suggestion, this is from the Daily Mail, that some male ski jumpers are injecting acid in this sort of acid mix into their penis to make it grow, which allows them to justify wearing baggier jumpsuits, which then give them more lift.
Wow, really? Yeah. Well, they scan
what?
Their body?
Yeah.
And they're like...
Yeah, like the measurement basically involves their undercarriage.
And it would detect if they just stuffed a couple of socks there. It would be able to differentiate that.
I assume so. Otherwise, that'd be hilarious if it couldn't. That'd be hilarious if they'd been injecting acid into their penises. Yeah, literally just watching their penises melt. And then some Swedish guy's just like, just use a sock, mate. Okay. Next, what causes chaos after storming town in Australia?
Is it Australian? Causes chaos after storming town in Australia.
That must happen sometimes.
Is it 13-year-old with Facebook causes chaos after storming town in Australia?
I thought it was going to be England batsman, but
yeah, they wish.
Yeah, unfortunately,
my parents were there recently. So is it them? Are they the ones causing
chaos? It is
chaos?
Emerald's parents caused chaos after storming town in Australia.
Going around all the markets and taking all the free samples, putting them out of business.
Yeah, and then when they ran out, they like trashed the stores. Of course, they haven't been caught yet.
Wow.
The Pastons still at large.
You guys are close in so many ways. The answer is 1,000 feral camels caused chaos after storming town in Australia. Yeah, so last week, the town of Mount Liebig in the Australian outback, about 200 miles from Alice Springs, was inundated with a herd of rampaging camels. I quote this from the Daily Mail, looking for moisture.
That is actually quite chilling, I would say.
I know.
I don't know if the term inundated is the right word for that. How was work? Oh, I was inundated with emails. Yeah, no, God, honestly, the number of calls coming in, inundated with it. Yeah, no, number of feral camels. Inundated with feral camels.
One man told the press, a lot of homes have external taps. I've seen camels rip them off the walls looking for water.
Oh my God.
Did they find it? Did they get it?
No, they're still on. Well, apparently, because the temperatures there are hitting 50, and in some cases, I think they've been documented at 53 degrees. So the camels are, they're going a bit mad. So they're saying they need to get Crocodile Dundee.
Camel Dundee.
This might sound a bit harsh, but camels do bang on a lot about how much they can store water, don't they?
They're personally talking about
I've got so much water I can survive ages without water. Yeah. Yeah. Look who's talking, look who's laughing now. Who's come crawling back for some more hydration.
Looking for moisture. Yeah. Also, not enough to have one hump, you had to have a second for the water. Well, joke's on you. Yeah, sounds like it's a serious issue that we've
Are they doing
made...
anything to help the camels?
It's funny because I read the article and I did think, you get to the point where you go, and this is how it's sorted out. And it just kind of went... Yeah, someone should probably do something about this. Your town could be next.
So if you're on this warpath of the 1,000 feral camels, batten down the hatches and throw out bottled water from the windows to distract them from ripping off your taps.
Yeah. We'll make fake taps.
I like that our solutions are in no way help the camels. It's survive the oncoming horde of feral camels.
And finally... Still hungry after your meal, you could what?
Still hungry after your meal, you could stop complaining about it. That was actually submitted by my mum when I was 13.
That rings a bell with me.
14, 15, 16.
Yeah. 36.
Still hungry after your meal, you could scream into a Tupperware.
Well, then close the lid.
And what? Like, and capture the screen? Save it for lunch? Still hungry after your meal, you could have ordered more, you moron. Why did you listen to the waiter when they said three dishes between two was more than enough?
Why did you listen to your partner when they said,
idiot.
No, I don't want any of your chips, you just have chips, and then they eat all your chips.
Yeah, I don't want any, I'll just have one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, all my chips have gone now, I'm really hungry. The answer is still hungry after your meal, you could eat the spoon.
Oh!
Can I say, I've experienced this. We got a salad in France, like from a supermarket.
Yeah.
And the spoon was made of like bread.
Wait, it was made of bread?
It was like hard bread. I don't know how to describe it. Cracker?
A baguette?
A cracker. But it functioned as a spoon.
A hollowed out baguette.
Like a hard bread, but it's fashioned into a small tiny disc. And there was some kind of like solid milk on top of it. And they had lots of them on plates. This is the news of a breakthrough. In the development of edible cutlery, a British inventor, Edward Rowlandson, has finally invented an edible spoon that can withstand the pressure of scooping up food without breaking, but you can also eat it, so it's malleable enough that your teeth can break it down.
The problem is, I eat my meals in order of the things that I like the most.
Me too. Wait, did you start with your favourite or your least favourite?
Mm. Least favourite.
Same. Vegetables.
Because we're 11 years old.
Basically, yeah.
Would this spoon be my favourite part of the meal?
Good question.
That's the issue.
We'll find out. It's made of chia, poppy and flax seeds and held together with isomalt.
So that's going isomalt. First in my meal. I'm just eating the spoon to get it out of the way.
it tastes a bit like a cereal bar, apparently.
Huh.
Now,
oh,
interesting. Because most cereal bars are sweet, aren't they?
I think isomalt basically is a sugar-based sort of like edible.
So this is like your dessert.
You're mixing sweet and savoury.
Yeah. The spoon's the dessert, Jack.
The spoon, if you eat the spoon last, you have the. You wouldn't want. You wouldn't
it's going to leave some taste, isn't it? It's going to leave some taste in my mouth when I'm eating my savoury stuff and I'm getting a sweet taste of the spoon every time.
Mm, yeah, how much does it dissolve?
This is my nightmare.
I think it sounds great.
It reduces like plastic waste from plastic spoons and cutlery.
It's good for the environment. It's something like it. Jack does not care about. We posted this missing word round on our social media channels, and congratulations to Daddy Care on Instagram, who
Daddy.
Made us Daddy Care,
Daddy Care,
Daddy Care, who made us laugh with their response when they said, "Still hungry after your meal? You could eat the rich." He put a question mark on the end.
Yeah, he's not being demanding. It's just a suggestion thrown out there. Kind of putting it into the ether.
I think it's what Queenie would have said if she were here today.
I think we found Queenie's secret burner account.
Yeah.
God, yeah, it must be her burner account because he's put some pretty incendiary posts about you, Mike.
Follow Have I Got News For You on Instagram and Twitter so you can enter our missing words round when we post another one next Monday. Thank you for listening to In The News This Week. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
For updates on the show, make sure you're following Have I Got News For You on Instagram, TikTok and Twitter.
You can also get in touch with us by emailing podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with 2 T's.
Make sure you're following and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it now, and we'll see you here for next week's episode.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
I'm going to go make a cup of tea.
Bye.
I've got to scale the shard first, though.
In the News This Week is presented by Jack Harris, Queenie Miller, Emerald Paston, and Mike Raymond. The producer is Diggory Waite. The executive producer is Claire Broughton. And the music is by Big George. In the News This Week is a Hattrick podcast.
You did promise me you'd come back from the Antarctic tall and blonde.
And skinny.
The Coldest Shift. An Antarctic adventure presented by Dr. Rachel Varnum.
We need to be the forerunners in making sure that we keep the Antarctic the only continent without COVID.
We can perform small operations here.
How many nurses are going with you? None. Are you taking a dentist? No, that's me as well. Are you taking a physio? No, that's me. So all of the things that you have in a hospital, we've had training on, essentially.
Oh, Rachel, why would you do that as a medic? It's ridiculous.
So here's a little story about the journey on the James Clark Ross.
The Coldest Shift. Available now on all podcast platforms.